Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
This is the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast.
Well, thanks for listening to the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast hosted by Lifeway. Ron's mission is to help church leaders become better leaders, and I'm your host, Nate Edmondson. Pops, you with us?
I am. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well.
Good. I like the correct English there, doing well.
Yeah, well, you were always pretty strict about the grammar in the house, so thank you. I owe that to you.
I was usually the one that blew it.
But yeah. Last time on the podcast, we talked about how to find leaders and who to look for in leaders in the church. Today, we're going to follow up on that conversation and talk about some reasons why people may not be leading. Hmm. In my last church, it was a church plant, church replant, and there were two guys in particular who had had significant leadership in their career and also previously in another church that they had been a part of, but they were very slow to commit to leading in our church. They seemed like the kind of people that were certainly qualified. They had lots of skills, character. They were good to be around, and yet they were slow to commit. What are some reasons that that might be the case, and why is that something that leaders need to think about anyway? Why should we even ask, why won't people lead, or why are people not leading?
Well, it goes back to what we talked about last time is finding new leaders is critical to moving the mission forward. And it's also part of discipleship, part of investing in people to where they can disciple others, making disciples who can disciple other people. And so it's a critical point, part of our mission, of the objective of the church. But the fact is, there's still going to be people sitting out there who aren't leading. And so if we can figure out why they aren't leading, we can better turn around and address the fact that they're not. And so, as you know, I'm a lister, and so I'll share five reasons that I've observed of why people aren't leading yet. And then we'll close by sharing something we did at one of our churches is just to discover some new leaders and to onboard some new leaders. And hopefully that'll be helpful. But the first one is this: they don't have anything or anyone to lead. And that's just pretty common sense, right? They've not been given anything to lead. They've not had people placed under their leadership. And so, what I like to do in that situation is create things, create opportunities for somebody to lead. Here, for example, where I'm at as we record this, serving as a intentional interim pastor, and there's a young or a guy on staff that I think has incredible potential, but. And so he's leading in a ministry. I think he has more capacity than he's been given. So in my early days, I actually created some things. I didn't need the help as much, but I created some things for him to lead, and he knocked it out of the park. That exposed in him kind of a desire to lead at a higher level and showed the church, and or at least church leaders, here's somebody that has some additional potential. So I created opportunities for him.
So when you say that you created opportunities, describe some of those opportunities.
Well, for instance, we were going to do we were during the pandemic, and we were going to do some online discipleship opportunities. There were plenty of people who could have stepped up and led that. He was not in a position that you would have naturally thought that he would have done that. But I asked him to lead the effort, to bring the people to the table, create the opportunities, even write some of the curriculum and that sort of thing. So he stepped up and he did it, did a great job.
That's awesome. Cool.
The second reason that people aren't leading is they're afraid. you know, when you think about it, leadership really is scary, isn't it? I'm doing a Bible study, writing a Bible study right now for senior adults. And, you know, fear is so prevalent among senior adults. And one of the things that I'm talking about in it is how Joshua, in Joshua chapter 1, was asked to lead after Moses. Now imagine following Moses as the leader, right? And you're going to lead the people into an unknown land. Do you think Joshua was afraid? Of course he was afraid. He was terrified. I don't know that for sure, but I suspect mostly because God told him in Joshua chapter 1, don't be afraid. I mean, why did God need to tell him not to be afraid if he wasn't afraid? So fear is a natural emotion for something we don't understand. It's a common emotion for all leaders. In fact, one of the things I would say, if you're listening to this and you're just terrified about something right now, you're normal. Like, that's not that you're a bad leader or not capable. It's that you're normal. And what I would say to you is press into that fear. Pray hard, lean strong on God, but lead. It's what leaders do. Leaders take people into unknown lands. And, you know, we don't need a leader when the path is clearly defined and risk-free. We need leaders when we're going into something uncharted territory. So it's natural that people are afraid. Challenge their fear, challenge them to step up, challenge them as God did in Joshua chapter 1 to stand strong in spite of their fears.
That's great.
The third reason is that I've heard, that I've observed, is that they had some sort of setback in their life and they simply gave up. Maybe they tried leading and it was hard. Maybe they got hurt in their last leadership position. Maybe they've even failed, had a failure, and so they just quit. And so now they're just going to sit back and they're going to wait for other people to lead. One of the things that we have loved in our churches, and you know this, in at least in the last couple of churches we've been a part of, is the number of people, former pastors that we have in the church, or people who have, you know, burn out from ministry and they are taking a time to recover and heal. I love having them sitting in our church, and I love putting them to work in some way. But, you know, if that's the story that you have, if you're listening, or that people in your church have, you got to encourage them to get up and try again. You know, the reality is the best leaders have failed many times. I mean, you know all my failures, son, and we're not going to talk about them today. But I have a lot of them to pull from. And they've made me, shaped me into who I am today. Someone said success is a combination of what you learn through failures. And I think I agree with that. Real leaders try again and again until something sticks. They get back in the game. And the crazy thing is, when someone who's been sitting on the sideline returns to the game and leads again, it is so refreshing and encouraging to other people. It motivates other people to step up and lead, especially when they know your story.
I think that's a good word, because in my previous role, we had a number of people in our church who had been hurt by other churches. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up in our church because they felt like our church was a place where they wouldn't have to do as much, which on one hand I can understand. And that's, there's maybe a season where somebody needs to take a step back and rest and all of that. But there was a pastor in St. Louis who said to me when I was talking about that, he said, but remember that people don't get healthy again unless they start exercising. Mm. And so you can't,
that's good.
You can't really be healthy if you're just continuing to sit on the couch and watch everybody else do everything. And I think sometimes my tendency is to be afraid to challenge somebody who says they need a break, because I never want to be the, you know, controlling, abusive pastor who's, you know, working everybody in the church to death and is, you know, manipulating people into serving and stuff. And so my tendency is to be extra soft and gentle. But that's also not that's not helping them long-term by just allowing people who are qualified to lead, capable of leading, to just continue to sit because they had a bad experience one time.
That's right.
We wouldn't encourage our kids to do that. If they struck out once, you know, they're just never going to play baseball again or whatever. So,
and I have found also that some of those people who have had those failures, and yet we there's all kinds of things we could unpack here and we won't spend time on that. Make sure you're not just sending somebody back in who's not qualified or hasn't been through the, you know, restoration and all that. So we're not talking about that. But yeah, somebody who, for example, somebody who had a business and had a business failure, when they get back in the game, sometimes they're so much more qualified because they learned from experience, from the hard knocks kind of experience. So some of those can make some of your best leaders. Here's the fourth reason I've observed that people may not be leading. They want to lead, but they don't think they know how. They don't think they ever learn the secrets of leadership. Now, I have to be real careful with this, and I say this trying to say it in a humble kind of way. Because I've been leading a long time, because I have a blog on leadership, because I've written a book on leadership, a lot of times people under my leadership who serve on my staffs will think that, well, they're not going to be able to perform at the level that I expect them to. And that's just not true at all. In fact, I love new leaders. I love seeing people explore their skills and their leadership. So I have to be conscious of that and understand, okay, they may not be stepping up because they're afraid they'll do it the wrong way. And I just have to encourage them and challenge them and even say what I'm saying right now, say, don't be afraid to mess up. But if you've got those people in your church, or maybe you're that person who is sitting on the sidelines, my advice is just join the School of Leadership. I mean, there's leaders all around you. Watch them. See what they're doing. Every good leader, if they're a good leader, is still learning too. I am. And, you know, the best leaders never quit learning. So we're all trying to figure this out as we go. And as we record this, we're in a season where none of us have ever done what we're doing. 2020 has taught us that, right? So join in on the fun of learning the field of leadership. And that would include, again, watching other leaders, listening to other leaders. You know, I believe in interviewing other leaders and talking to them and learning from them. Take something with you and take notes from them. Reading about leadership, listening to podcasts like this one, asking questions. That's what leaders do. And you can learn the skills of leadership if you're teachable, and so can the people sitting there in your churches.
Yeah, and that's something you've always encouraged me to do. Is just you constantly mail me books or send me articles or send me something to listen to, and that number one is encouraging to me whenever you do that, because it means that you believe in me enough to do that. But then it also just demonstrates, oh, he must have read that. You know, he's probably not sending something that he hasn't even read. So yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, then the last one that I would say, of observation of why people aren't leading, is they think they don't have the authority to lead. And you know, that's a lot of times a product of the environment. If this is the one, they're not leading because they don't think they have the authority to lead. You have to ask yourself, how do we create that environment around here? How do we create an environment conducive to producing new leaders? And that's a huge one. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in other episodes of the podcast. But many people are sitting there and they just don't think they have the authority to lead. What I would say to them is if that's you, let's say you're a youth pastor listening and you don't feel like you've been given the authority to really lead in your context, what I might say to you is you have to learn to lead up. In other words, influencing the people that are supposed to lead you. Or, and this is a hard one, find a place which values your input and that allows you to lead. You know, we need leaders right now in the kingdom of God. Right now, we need some strong people of leadership in the kingdom of God. So learn to lead within your own context, whether that's leading up or leading out because you go lead somewhere else. It's just too important. We need you in leadership. So, you know, this is just a few thoughts, but I guess I would close with this encouragement is don't assume because you don't have leaders that it's simply a matter of they're sitting out there and don't want to lead. Look for, and there may be more than what we shared here, but look for the reasons people aren't leading and then begin to address those. And when you do that, you'll improve the quantity of leaders in your organization or church.
I think that's a good word because, you know, my tendency when I look out and I'm like, man, we just don't have any leaders. People aren't stepping up. People aren't leading. It's just to blame people. Like, well, at our church, our people just don't, man. And the number of times that I've been in a conversation with a pastor who's complaining about his church and talking about how my people just won't do this or our people just won't, you know, that mentality and that attitude rarely produces leaders. So that's what I love about what you're encouraging is, well, if people aren't leading, ask why, try to diagnose that, and then begin addressing those reasons. Don't just assume that you've inherited the church where people just don't lead here, you know?
Well, and I said at the beginning we would share something we did, and so I will, and that leads right into it because this actually came from a conversation similar to what you said is, where someone on our staff said, well, we have tried to find these leaders and they're just not out there. And yet we were growing rather rapidly and we needed some new leadership. So here's what we did. And this is just real practical. And I think that this would work in any context. And the size of it may depend on so you can alter the size depending on the size of the church. We got our staff together. And you could, again, do this with volunteers. And we identified about 60 names of people who were in the church, active in the church, but were not currently leading in any capacity, about 60 of them. And they were all younger because we were, again, trying to identify future leaders for the church. So we got about 60 names. There were seven staff members assigned to this, and we divided them out as almost like a football draft with all 60 of their names up on a board. We divided them out among the seven of us, and then we spent a year investing in them. Obviously we had to recruit them first and ask them if they wanted to be a part of them. And I think about, I don't remember what the number, but it was over 50 that were willing to do that. So that involved, we all read the same book together, for example. We did some training, some group training with all of them in a room about who the church is, what we believe in, you know, just like you would a membership class almost, but on a higher level, a deeper look inside the organizational structure of the church. So there was some group components there. And then each of us with our individual groups went deeper with them and unpacked our own life. You know, here's my world of leadership. This is what I've learned over the years, kind of a mentoring kind of role there. And then after that, on the backside of that is we tried to find places where they could actually serve somewhere in a leadership position, sometimes under somebody or working directly with somebody, but we tried to actually help them find real leadership positions. And it was incredibly helpful. I would say at the end of that experiment, which lasted, and I call it an experiment because anytime we try to do something new, we try to call it an experiment. But the end of that year, I would say there was at least probably a third of those who were actively serving in some leadership position that would probably be serving for a long time. So serving on a committee, heading up some kind of ministry. So it did produce new leaders. Now, in our context, again, that means 20 new leaders or so that we've unleashed in a year in our church. Imagine you do that every year. It would change many of the churches in which we serve. And again, change the context of the numbers. Maybe your number is 2 new leaders. Maybe your number is 50 new leaders, depending on the size of your church. But if you can onboard, most of us would not turn down. We wouldn't turn down 2 leaders, even in a larger church. But most of us would not turn down that many new leaders in a given year.
One minor point I want to ask you about. Why do you call the things that you try like that experiments?
Because if they don't work, we don't have to keep doing them.
Cool. So you're not locking yourself into anything.
That's right.
Cool. Well, Pops, thanks for sharing with us today. I think this is super helpful. And hopefully somebody hears this and applies it and experiences some fruit because of it.
I hope so. Join us next time. And before we go, take some time to review this podcast. Subscribe to it and tell somebody about it. We would love for them to join and listen as well.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Ron Edmondson Leadership Podcast. For more information about Ron, check out ronedmondson.com. Have you listened to the new Church's Q&A podcast with Daniel M., Ed Stetzer, and Todd Atkins recently? As a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network, they've recently covered topics like reopening a multi-site church, fundraising during a pandemic, and leading through change. Just look up New Churches, 2 words, on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.